Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. It is Thursday, May 28th, 2026. Good morning, everybody. Hope you're all doing well on this lovely Thursday. And it's particularly lovely because our ace is back. We swept the Royals. And chat, we are closing in on the Rays fast. They have lost four in a row. In the meantime, we, of course, have won four in a row. We find ourselves entering today's off day just 1.5 games back of Tampa Bay for first place in the American League East. And, of course, Friday, after the bad loss at the stadium, we were 5.5 back. Well, baseball, of course, as we know, can... I got to remember to turn the intro music off. Baseball, as we know, can turn quite quickly, and that has happened in the matter of 4 days. The Rays find themselves unable to win a game against the Baltimore Orioles, and it's starting to look a little bit ugly for them. Now, I resent the idea of overreacting to individual losses or anything like that. A bad team or a great team will have weeks like this, just like, you know, us, a good team that I consider us to be, have had bad stretches too. But the Rays are fugazi. The Rays are fraudulent to the degree of division-wise. They're possibly going to be a playoff contender because the American League is so thin. I'm not saying they're a bad team, but I keep mentioning it, not in a, oh, I told you so way. I couldn't give a crap about that, but more so just, I've felt this way for a minute, that the Rays obviously, doesn't take a rocket scientist to believe this, we're going to come back down to earth, and seemingly we're in the process of that. And the Yankees are taking advantage. And with that, game and a half back of the AL East first place Tampa Bay Rays entering today's off day. And a big part of that is Gerrit Cole. Excellent yet again. 6 2/3 innings, 4 hits, no runs, no walks, 10 strikeouts, just 79 pitches needed to get through those 6 2/3. He earns his first win of the season. Here's a little bit on how it sounded and some post-game from Cole.
The 0-2. Strike 3. Got him looking. That is strikeout number 10 for Gerrit Cole. 79 pitches, and Aaron Boone is going to say, job well done, as Cole will depart. 6 2/3 scoreless in his second start back from Tommy John.
You hear all the time that pitchers probably won't be their best coming back from Tommy John until year two. Is it surprising you at all that you've been so dominant, so efficient, so quickly?
I think when I first started throwing and I was able to get through the four seam better than I had been in the previous few years, that was obviously an encouraging sign. And then outside of that, it's two games, man. It's small sample. So there's still stuff to improve, and we'll just have to keep the same mindset that we have right now and I take it one outing at a time.
I will do that. I'm taking it one outing at a time. But, you know, I kept mentioning to you guys, like, can't wait for Cole to come back. Let's make sure we're patient with him, though, because more often than not, very much so more often than not, pitchers, when they come back from Tommy John, do come out of the gate rusty, and that's okay. We've seen it ourselves, whether it be Jordan Montgomery coming off TJ, his first year back wasn't great. Jameson Taillon, when we acquired him from the Pirates, his first half after TJ wasn't great. More often than not, there's an adjustment period, and that still very well could be the case with Cole, of course, and at some point he will give up a run. At some point he will have a bad start. But so far through two, he looks incredible. And not just the stuff, which we were talking about it last night. It's so obvious because he has a new elbow. His elbow was all busted up, had to get it fixed, and he did. So it makes total sense, but it's still exciting to say out loud that he looks better than he did in 2024. Which, again, is not some crazy take. That's how it should go. That's why he got Tommy John surgery, because he was dealing with something, and now he's not. But the stuff is one thing. And the command was much better last night than it was in his first start against the Rays, while it still wasn't bad. But that's a big part of the rust, the adjustment command. The stuff, though, is there. What I want to talk about is, not that this is unprecedented, we've seen it before. Justin Verlander won a Cy Young after Tommy John surgery. Pitchers have returned quickly and succeeded quickly from Tommy John, I should say. But with a year and a half off for Cole and a new elbow, already being the Hall of Fame pitcher that he is, blah, 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 I think this dude might be better than at least what we've seen Yankee tenure Gerrit Cole. Now, 2021 Cole, say what you will about Spider Tech, that is still even above 2023 Cy Young Cole. Is the best addition of him I think we ever saw in pinstripes. There's 2019 Cole, that's whatever. But just comparing it to the guy we saw pre-surgery, who was good, you know, he came back and in the regular season in 24, I think it was 17 starts, had an ERA like of 3.4. But then in the postseason, five more starts, ERA was in the low twos. He was really good. He was a damn good pitcher for the Yankees, but clearly wasn't the Gerrit Cole that we were so accustomed to watching with Houston and early on in Yankee tenure. Well, now I'm starting to get my hopes up that he could be even better than that. And a big part of it is the brain that this dude has and understanding not just about his stuff and what's working on that given day, but understanding what the hitters are doing. And we saw that on his first start with the Rays, where first pitch swinging on the fastball, they're not doing nothing against it. Okay, well, I'm going to keep on throwing it. Last night, his stuff was terrific. But, you know, you factor in healthy elbow, everything we already discussed, everything that's obvious with Gerrit Cole. Don't want to harp on all that. But he probably, I'm biased, of course. We're biased. Like, I don't watch every single game 162 from other, I do, Yankees-wise. I'm saying other teams. He's got to be the best pitch sequencer in baseball going. And let me clarify and emphasize, I don't watch 162 of other teams. I do watch 162 of the Yankees. That'd be such a bad nugget to throw in there. Like, I don't watch all 162, but here's my take. Like, no, yes, I do. But, you know, I'm biased because I don't watch other teams every single game. But I would have to guess Cole is, at the very least, a top three, top five pitch sequencer in the game. He's got a healthy elbow. He's a genius. He's, like, grizzled vet vibes. And this is a little, like, Saturday morning cartoon reason, I understand. But a year and a half off from the game, while your team's a contender, he always wanted to be a Yankee. A year and a half of not being able to do that, it's quite easy to imagine how that can motivate somebody. And between all those reasons listed and just watching him pitch, that's more so what we're talking about here. Through two starts, and again, the clunker, the rust, that will come. Come. Jesus Christ. 8 a.m. show this morning. I got baseball today at 9:30, so excuse my, I don't know, my voice on having its morning cup of coffee yet. But anyways, this is the best Cole has looked in a long time. And it's through two starts, I know, but just going off those two starts, which is what we have to do, that's the beauty of an everyday show, 5 days a week. We will analyze everything. We'll analyze the good, we'll analyze the bad, because we'll be here for both. And for right now, I have two starts to go off with Cole, and he looks better than he did when he won the Cy Young in 2023. I won't go as far as to say better than 2021, but that was more of a stuff thing. And Cole was always, you know, smart guy, knows what he's doing. I trust his brain. But add on five more years after that with experience now with adversity, with the injury, and just everything we know about Gerrit Cole now with a healthy elbow. I mean, this wasn't supposed to happen just yet. Cole was supposed to be rusty. Cole was supposed to, forget even rusty, like he could have been good these last two starts, but good. 5 1/3, 2 runs, six, whatever. Like, and you'd be like, oh, what, he's Cole. Fine, I don't care. Like, we'll see you in October. That was kind of always what I had said, is I wouldn't be shocked if Cole puts up a 4 ERA in the regular season, but come October, he's Gerrit Cole for a game. And then every single game he pitches in October, he would be that guy. But I was already saying Friday that the Yankees are going to win the AL East by 5+ games. Forget the AL East, because to be honest, the Rays, this is fun, and I'm enjoying this. We're not going to be talking about the Rays too much longer. I think we may be talking about them for another 72 hours, to be honest with you. Forget that. The American League has to be shitting themselves, if they were not already. Forget the American League, to be honest with you. The Dodgers, the National League. This changes everything. Not from our perspective, what we already knew, which is Cole's coming back. We knew at some point he'd probably look close to this level. But now it's tangible. Now it's real. It's not, oh, and they're going to be getting Cole back. The Yankee rotation is really good right now, and they're going to get Cole back. No, Cole is back. And not to be cliche, but he appears relatively better than ever. Not better than ever, but you know what I'm saying. I made my point with that. This is the best rotation in the division, best rotation in the American League, and it's got to be the best rotation in all of baseball. I assume number two would be the Dodgers. We were talking about it last night in the watch party. What is their full health rotation? And if I remember correctly, Yamamoto, Otani, Snell, if he's healthy, Glasnow. Damn good starting four. And of course, in the postseason, you only need four starters. Ours right now shapes up to be some order of, I want Cam pitching the first two games, so that way he can pitch twice in a 7-game series. Cole, Cam, Fried, Rodon. I don't want back-to-back. That's not what this conversation's about. We'll get there. I'm not going to But anyways, our starting four at the very least is on par with the Dodgers starting four. Compare this team to 2024. With that already being known, that is said, that is obvious. Or at the very least, we're in that same conversation. If I can allow me to have some bias, our rotation's better than the Dodgers. But that's a big difference between the last time we faced them in the World Series 2 years ago. What else is different? The defense. Guys aren't playing out of position. We don't have Jazz playing third base. We don't have Aaron Judge playing center field. We have guys playing their position, a defensively sound team, fundamentals that have been vastly improved year over year. This is not the 2021 Yankees. It's not the 2024 Yankees. This team is vastly better, and that's a big reason why is the defense. Obviously, the pitching, that's number one. And offensively, a lot of people will, and understandably so, based off of, you know, past years, and this goes back to when I first started watching in 2011, people would say Yankees are great offense, but they can't hit in the postseason. Well, that narrative at times is often overblown. The offense is not, wasn't perfect in the playoffs last year. That's not why we lost. Why we lost is because, God bless him, I like Fried a lot, he had a bad start. Not just him, the bullpen was bad. Guys were tipping pitches. Luke Weaver was, love him too. I mean, whatever now, but at the time, it's not F Luke Weaver, it's just, oh, Weaver unfortunately was tipping pitches and he lost it post-injury, kind of the worst time possible. The pitching was not good enough against Toronto last year. That's ultimately why we lost. Point is, our offense can be still falling in line with that narrative where they're not as good in the postseason as they are in the regular season, which is the case for every single offense that exists, by the way, in the modern game. But we're more suited to be able to overcome that because our starting rotation is so great. Now, by the way, forgot to give the show rundown on what we're talking about today. Later on, we're going to get into the possibility of acquiring Tarek Skubal. No, I'm not one of those fans. Please don't, you know, if you're new around here, it's not like, oh, this guy's going to get Skubal. Bob Nightingale listed four suitors that is expected in the industry. The industry expects four suitors to be involved in the Skubal sweepstakes. It's us, it's the Padres, it's Dodgers, and the Blue Jays. So we're going to talk about it, but we're also just going to talk about trade deadline and my initial plans, which are pretty straightforward and obvious. Spoiler alert, we need the bullpen to be upgraded, obviously. We'll get a little specific with it. Not too much, not actually names, but just what exactly I want. And a right-handed hitting catcher. Anyways, point is, this furthers what I feel very confident in saying, that this is the best team of the Judge era. Not even close, to be honest. And especially if the number two is the 2024 Yankees. The 2024 Yankees were not that good. They were exciting. No, they were good, excuse me. But they weren't better than this team. They weren't. It's honestly, I think, a dramatic fall off from this year if you were to go down to 2024. Defense being a big part of it. The rotation in itself is a conversation ender in that regard. I mean, what was our rotation in the World Series? We had, or just that year, it was, we had Cole. This version of Cole's better, but forget that. Let's consider them equal just for argument's sake. We had Rodon, which Rodon was good in 2024. He wasn't yet at where he was last year, which is, reminder, one of the best pitchers in the American League. Rodon was great last year. Then we had Luis Gil. We had Clark Schmidt, which Clark is great. Luis Gil in 2024, he had a good game against Cleveland. Like, he was a fine pitcher. Our rotation wasn't, you know, abysmal in 2024. But there's obviously no comparison to what we have now, which will be a staff of some variation, Cole, Fried, Cam, Rodon. Not in that order, but with all that in mind, the deadline is very important this year because you have a chance. You have what I consider to be the best team in the American League. You have a team that can take down the Dodgers or whoever comes out of the National League. With that said, as we currently speak, this bullpen is not good enough to be able to do that. Fortunately, there is a trade deadline. Fortunately, there will be these holes addressed. And the Yankees know that for many reasons, not just because this is your best chance, but things we've discussed all year long and obvious things, you know, potential lockout next year. The CBA negotiations began, or first proposals were traded yesterday. I don't really get into that sort of thing. I'm sure we'll discuss it on Baseball Today. And by we, I mean Chris Rose. Jimmy Norp's going to be on today's episode, by the way. And that's why we're going so early. Jimmy Norp's making me get up at 5 a.m. because we're going at 9:30 today. God bless him. Anyways, Judge is 34. He's going to turn 35 next April. Cole's getting up there, too. We have two more years of Stanton. Like, obviously, this specific part of the window, not the window entirely, but like one frame of the window or a big frame of the window is not closing, but at some point before you know it, that's how it goes, it will close. Like, you know, people were being ridiculous about Judge and his, you know, 1 to 2 week slumps, which everybody's always waiting for the shoe to drop with Judge, which is, I'm not even saying Yankee fans that are irrational, which I think is more offensive, but more so baseball fans. Like, everybody's waiting for him to fall off, and that's fine, I get it. But usually it doesn't happen gradual. It's not a thing where it's going to be just taking Judge, for example, because we're talking about it, where it goes from 1.1 OPS to 1.05 OPS to a 1. Then 950 to 900. No, very more, much often it can be 1.1 to, say, year 9 of Judge. Say he's still putting up a 1. OPS through the first 8 years of this deal. Year 9, the way baseball often works, that's where it would drop down to like a 700. It can be a very dramatic fall off. Before you know it, the window has closed. Before you know it, things have changed. And that applies to every single team. I mean, not to pick on the Mets, but 2024, they experienced something that we've experienced as Yankee fans, that many other teams as well, us example being 2017, where it's like you get there and it's like, oh man, it's all good that we lost here because we're going to be back. We're gonna win not just one championship, but championships. We're set up. You don't know how quickly it can change. And in the case of the Yankees, we're in a great spot right now. We should be in a great spot next year, too. We're going to have even more starting pitching at this point next year. We have everybody intact that we currently have, plus you're going to have Clark fully back, which Clark will come back later, but I'm not banking on anything from Clark just yet this year because I don't want that to determine what we do at the trade deadline, banking on, oh, we can do Clark Schmidt in the bullpen. I love Clark. I'm looking at him kind of like 2019 Jordan Montgomery. You want to start in September when the rosters expand, word up. If there's a situation where he can put him in the bullpen, you feel good about it? All right, cool. That's fine with me. But I'm not trying to make plans around Clark Schmidt this year. Anyways, point is, we are set up for the future. Don't get me wrong. But many teams have felt like they're set up for the future. And then before you know it, you're looking back and thinking, oh man, I wish we went all in. And that's what the Yankees have to do this year. And it's very straightforward what there is to do, which is upgrade the bullpen. That's first and foremost. Austin Wells is going to have to figure out his shit to some level. And his at-bats yesterday were bad again too. And it's a thing where not just about consistent offensive production, but or just a lack thereof, obviously. But most guys, if you were to tell me going into the year, Austin Wells is going to be hitting 180 on May 28th. And that doesn't even do it justice. You could hit 180 and still be getting on base and hitting for some power. He's not doing none of that. His OPS is sub 600. Dude had three hits the other day, and it bumped his OPS from like 540 to 580. Anyways, he's going to be the starting catcher to some degree. But he has to be able to run around third, less than two outs, hit a fly ball. I'm like, Wells, I'm asking you, I'm still giving you permission to get out. Not to strike out on three pitches, though. Hit me a fly ball 275 feet and get the damn running. I love Wells. He's got to be better. And in the case of him, the Yankees will get a catcher this deadline. We'll talk about this more so. I feel like I'm spoiling the next few topics here. But we know there are issues with this team. But how great the rest of the team is all the more reason to make sure you shore up those loose ends. And they're big loose ends, particularly the bullpen. We'll touch more on that later on. Let's continue a little bit more with this game. Yankees win 7-0. You had a... Let's see. Let's talk about the Aaron Judge throw really quick, or more so just play the clip, because it was badass. This is one that Cole, in his post-game interview, was talking about, changed the entire game. That was a spot where he thought this run would for sure score, and at the time, I kind of did too, but there's a chance you throw him out, because it's Aaron Judge in right field.
1-1. Blocked off into right. Judge has to play it on a hop. They're going to send Massey home. Here's the throw. Oh!
I feel like we got a good read on it. You know, it was either kind of do or die for it, or, you know, kind of let it check up in front of me and, you know, try to make a good throw home. And really, it was a good job by Wellesley getting a good tag, you know, keeping him from, you know, getting to the plate.
What do you think that play meant for Garrett?
All I was thinking is, like, don't let this guy score, you know, especially Garrett coming back second game. You know, it's a tight game. We only got two runs, I think, at the time. So I know if we stopped them from scoring there, you know, they're probably not going to score the rest of the game. So it was just trying to do my job. You know, ball gets hit to you, you got to make a play.
And that's the difference with last year and this year, too. Judge was dealing with the flexor strain last year. His arm, remember his throws, he was having to lob it to the cutoff man. We saw the second the games were going on in the WBC that, no, Judge's arm is back and back to 100%. Great throw last night. Royals obviously don't score at the time. That was a nothing-nothing game. And right after that, it was very cool the way it played out. Nothing-nothing game, keeps it scoreless, and then immediately afterwards you have the Yankees getting on the board with, what was it, you had a Goldschmidt, another good night last night, he gets on base, Ben Rice, RBI triple, he goes the opposite way, Judge, sack fly, 2-0 Yanks. Later on, they'd add some more insurance runs. You had the one Austin Wells at bat, which was brutal, bases loaded, one out. After Caballero lined out, nothing you can do about that, hit the ball hard. But then Wells strikes out, it's like, bruh. But then you had Paul Goldschmidt, RBI walk, 3-0, followed by that, Ben Rice, 2-run single, big insurance, 5-0. And then one more soundbite to play, and then we'll get into the rest of the show, put a wrap on this game. I just want to shout out Ryan McMahon, because for a player who has not been good, he has not been good. And third base, we don't need to acquire a third baseman. I wouldn't rule it out, but let's just read the writing on the wall here. The Yankees want to have both Volpe and Caballero in the lineup. Now, against lefties, we'll see situations like last night where you want Rosario in there, obviously. How do you get Rosario, Caballero, and Volpe, all three of those in the game? Well, you start Volpe at short. Rosario, yesterday he played second. That's just a day off for Jazz, but normally it would be McMahon is off, Rosario plays third, Jazz at second, Caballero in left. And he looked fine in left. That's what it's going to be against lefties. Against righties, we are going to see, in all likelihood, more often than not, come like big-time games. I'm talking like, this is like postseason arrangement. Caballero, I think, is going to be your third baseman. Now, there's also the possibility if Lombard, like, gets going at AAA, you know, I'm not going to rule him out still. But with that in mind, I don't think third base is something that we got to worry about. With that said, McMahon creates this conversation because he has been bad. And he had a couple weeks where he was hitting the ball well, has since fallen back down to earth. I still think the at-bats look a lot better than they did early in the season. But my point is more so here, for a guy that is often looked at as helpless at the plate, which fair, you know, you don't feel great about McMahon at-bats. Every now and then he comes through enough to where you can watch a McMahon at-bat and think it's reasonable to have some hope he might just come through and do something. Here's last night's homer, opposite field again.
McMahon drives that to left to deep. Collins looking up. That ball is gone. Ryan McMahon shoots one up and out the other way. And the Yankee lead is now 7-0. We've seen McMahon go oppo a couple of times recently.
Yes, we have. 2-run shot, made it 7-0. Yanks. McMahon, shout out to him. Again, for somebody who hasn't been good, you can be like, he might just come through. There was a good comment a couple weeks back when what did he do last week? He tied the game up. When he tied the 3-run bomb against Dylan Cease to tie the game, it's like, all right. And somebody commented on that post in Yanks Ave. They're like, every time I call for McMahon's job, he does something to win the game. Now, yesterday, just a little insurance run, but still cool to see him go to the opposite field. Anyways, that's to put a bow on yesterday's game. Cole, excellent again. Yanks win their fourth straight. They sweep Kansas City. Day off today. We're going to Sacramento for 3 against the A's starting tomorrow. But yeah, again, Yankees enter the off day. Rays are also off today, so we can kind of just sit a little still at this right now. Game and a half back, entering Friday of the Tampa Bay Rays. They're 34-19, losers of 4 straight. We're 34-22, winners of 4 straight. So, yeah, man, things can change very quickly, and they have. I was more so stressed about just how torturous it was to endure it. You know, bad loss on Friday. And I'm not saying the Rays are a bad team, but even like playing them, I'm like, oh, we'll be able to shut down that offense. We shut down the running game, too. And they also caught the Yankees at a time where we weren't hitting. Judge wasn't hitting. Now guys are starting to get going again. We'll see how that continues against the A's. The Rays pitching is good. It's not elite. It's not that great. Or even call it elite, sure. What they're doing right now is like, I mean, I keep picking on Nick Martinez. He's fine. Good guy. He's not a 1.5 ERA pitcher. I don't even think he's a 3 ERA pitcher. He might be a sub-4. The Rays are not going to threat us. That's great. Threaten us long-term division-wise. The Blue Jays, they're getting a little bit hot. They're only a couple games under 500 now. They won again last night. Easily the bigger threat to me long-term, if I were to, you know, gun in my head, pick one. But it's not even that. I do respect the Blue Jays, and, you know, they'll start to get a little more healthy. I'm sure they'll go big at the deadline. They're who to fear in the division, not the Rays. But like I've always been saying, I'll play along. It is fun. I love scoreboard watching. I love having the Rays game up while I'm watching the Yanks. So it's like, word, I like a division race. But to be honest, like, it's cute. It's been cute. And it's about to be over. I think, again, we'll talk about it for another 72 hours. Anyways, let's move on. Quick little update here. This is a good one. Stanton cleared to begin running. So we've been waiting on the MRI results, which he got on Tuesday. And, of course, you know, had the right calf strain in April against Houston. And we've been missing him ever since. And we certainly have felt the lack of his presence, particularly before, you know, we started to get going here in Kansas City. But the offense lacking righty bats, lacking big hits and runners in scoring position, and nearly just when Stan's not going, just the presence alone, we know that he makes a difference. We've been missing him. Well, he got another MRI a couple weeks ago, showed, or a week ago, it was like, not enough healing, can't begin running yet. he's been hitting off the traject machine. And what we've been hearing is that he may not need a rehab assignment, which Stanton doesn't really like to do rehab assignments, so that adds up. All that we had to clear, though, was the MRI to show enough healing to where he can begin running. Well, that has now happened. Yesterday, the MRI came back. Stanton is good to go, cleared to begin running. And he's expected to take live BP next week. Honestly, I'm kind of surprised it's next week. Like, take it today, bro. But no, I think Stanton is going to be back possibly by the Boston series next week, to be honest. We have Sacramento for three. Then we come back home. So we're off to just schedule, thinking out loud. It's off today, Thursday, in Sacramento for three, Friday through Sunday. Off again on Monday. So a couple days off, needed days off for the Yanks. This is good. Back home Tuesday against the Guardians at the stadium. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Cleveland. And then a week from tomorrow, a week from Friday, Boston. Which, I'm not setting this around the fact that we're playing Boston. Who cares? They're terrible. But I think that's when Stanton could come back. A week from Friday. Which would be huge. Can't wait. So, big hurdle has been crossed. Or is about to be crossed. He's now cleared to cross it. He can begin running. And again, he's been hitting off the traject machine. Probably not doing a rehab assignment. So, once he's, you know, a couple days of, yeah, running the bases, doing all that, keeps hitting, I think we'll see him back. Possibly, to be honest, even before the Boston series. If I had to guess, that's my prediction when he returns. Also, another update, you had Jason Dominguez. He is continuing baseball activities as well. He'll begin, not officially yet, but it's expected he could begin a rehab assignment next week, which, yeah, going to be interesting to see what they do with that. Maybe we'll talk about it more when that time comes, but I haven't done a deep roster dive on how this would work, but like I would like to have both. Obviously, Stanton will be back and playing pretty much every day, but like I want Jason up here too. Jason makes this team better. With that said, though, good news on that front. Stanton should be back at the very least soon. I'm predicting a week from Friday, the series opener against Boston. Thought I was getting a phone call for a second. Anyways, let's move on to this. Now, there's a reason I didn't put this in the title or thumbnail today's video. I mean, maybe I end up will later on. But I don't want this to be a thing where Yankees in the mix for big time ace. Yankees expected to be major players for like what has been reported is Bob Nightingale saying the industry expects the Dodgers, Padres, Blue Jays, and Yankees viewed as the most likely bidders for Tarik Skubal. Obviously, the Tigers have been ass. Excuse me, they haven't been good, really bad. And since their fall off last year, they're 20 games under 500. Of course, you know they were leading the Central for a bit, a long while last year till like into August, and you know, nobody's really touched him. All of a sudden, the Guardians come back and they win the division. Since the point where the Tigers' fall off started last year, which was like sometime like late in the summer, through now, they're 20 games under 500. So if this were to continue, Tarik Skubal, it doesn't hurt his chances of being available. What we're going to do with this is, would it make sense for the Yankees to entertain this? And a lot of people's argument is, you know, the classic, make what's already good great. In our case, rotation-wise, make what's already great. Can't even say make what's great elite. Make what's already elite. Historic, overkill, I don't know. I'm down. And I want to make sure I say this properly because sometimes when you bring up one trade deadline request or one want that you have, people will be like, oh no, we need this. You can both want the bullpen to be upgraded and to get a right-handed catcher in here. Like, I think one bad thing that we fall into as like sports fans or just like humans when talking, whether it be on Twitter, that like everything is black and white. There's one take. You can't think multiple thoughts at once. Like, I assure you, I can think multiple thoughts at once. I'm on medication for it, to be honest. Nah. But the bullpen, that's first and foremost. Getting a righty catcher, both those things first and foremost. We know that. If Tarik Skubal is available, should the Yankees make the phone call? Absolutely. What would it take? Not as much as you might think. There's not going to be a lot of bidders because of the fact that even just the money you'd have to take on the rest of this year. He's making over, what, $30 million arbitration. So, you know, obviously pro-rate or whatever would be like half the year, like $15 million the rest of the year, $10 million, whatever it be at the time. Some teams, unless they're truly in it and going for it, aren't going to be like willing to add on that salary. Believe it or not, that's how a lot of baseball teams operate. So the biddings, or the teams that would be bidding on Skubal, and like Nightingale mentions, it's expected to be the Dodgers, Padres, Blue Jays, and Yankees. So we'll see what happens there. There's many reasons why you want to do this, even if at first it's like, yo, our rotation's already so great. You're 100% right. Do we need Skubal? No, we do not need Skubal. With that in mind, well, first of all, it would still vastly improve our chances of winning the World Series. But on the flip, not getting him and letting him go somewhere else, like the Dodgers, or say the Blue Jays, yeah, they get back into it and come the deadline, we're neck and neck, which is a possibility. We won't be neck and neck with the Rays. We just will not be. The Blue Jays, could I see that happening to where like they get in it and we're starting to think about them again? 100%. What if they acquire Tarik Skubal? My first year watching was 2011. I've said this many times. You guys know that. But I always call that my first year because that was my first full 162. I came home off the bus, and then my dad just sat me down. We must have talked about it before, but I have no remembrance of that or no recollection of that. It was just March 31st, 2011. Papa John's Pizza was there. I had a cherry Coca-Cola, and he sat me down in the garage in front of a big screen, and I watched Yankees-Tigers, 6-3 win. And that was my first 162. But anyways, 2010 ALCS was the first time I started, like, watching the Yankees for, like, oh, there's a game tonight I'm going to watch. Like, it was, my dad was watching. It was just, like, a thing. Like, I just – that was my first time really just sitting down and watching a game. And I'll never forget Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee is somebody who forever kind of like changed my thinking of the trade deadline because instantly I was made aware that the Yankees had a chance to acquire Cliff Lee at that deadline. Of course, he was with the Mariners at the time, and the Yankees, I forget exactly how the story goes, but initially the deal was with like a top prospect and one of their other top prospects at the time, David Adams. He broke his leg, so that deal couldn't go down because of that. Mariners countered the Yankees like, all right, we can't include him in the deal now, obviously. Can you give us Eduardo Nunez? Yankees said no. At the time, he was the heir to the throne of shortstop to an aging Derek Jeter, which at the time, mid-2010s, Jeter was hitting like 260. He was on his way down. Later came back up, but at the time, that was like a low point for Jeter. So heir to the throne of shortstop was Nunez. Yankees didn't want to give him up. They don't get Cliff Lee. Well, Mariners then trade Cliff Lee to the Rangers, and to a degree, Cliff Lee single-handedly beats the Yankees in that 2010 ALCS. And then I thought the Yankees were going to sign him the next offseason. That's a side note. He ends up going to the Phillies for less money because I guess his wife got like spit on during the 09 World Series. Not a big deal, whatever. No, I'm just kidding. Point is, it's not always just about do we need him. It's about what are the repercussions if we don't get him and somebody else does. That's more so where my motivation would come from here. Now, again, bullpen, that is to be addressed. And this is all kind of, I guess, one topic here. First and foremost, you need two high leverage relievers at the deadline. I was talking to my guy Smelly last night. Smelly, if you're listening, what's up? We were talking about what he had said two high leverage relievers and like one extra arm. I honestly think we just need two. If it's high leverage relievers, I'm talking names that we know, borderline two legitimate blue chip relievers, because if you get two high leverage relievers in here, one, everybody else just moves down. No longer is Fernando Cruz your seventh or eighth inning man. He can be, but you can actually use him in the role that he's better suited for team-wise, which is you're in a jam in the fifth or in the sixth early. You need strikeouts. You can put Cruz in right there. Camilo Duvall, I'm not sure what his role would be if we acquire two high-leverage arms. He would get pushed down the pecking order significantly, obviously. And right now, theoretically, he is still our seventh, eighth inning guy. The entire bullpen would be moved down one. Same with if you were to acquire a closer, which I don't worry too much about David Bednar. I feel fine about Bednar. He's had some bad games, but he's not in Duvall category by any means. But if there's a closer available, you go out and get him. All right, he can be your ninth inning guy. Bednar's still a very big part of this. He just gets slid down to the eighth inning or whatever, maybe seventh inning. The entire bullpen, you acquire two high leverage guys, just becomes deeper. Now, the way the bullpen will also become deeper is, of course, come the postseason, you only need four starters. So at some point, listen, we can have the conversation about regular season, like, what happens when Freed comes back? Is it Cole or is it not Cole? Is it Warren? Is it Weathers going to the bullpen? That's all well and good, but come the postseason, assuming everybody's healthy, which you can't assume, but for now we will because they are, Weathers and Warren will go to the bullpen. That will vastly improve our bullpen. I'm not ruling out Carlos Legrand being brought up as a reliever at some point. So two relievers, I think, is enough. Two legitimate relievers. I'm not talking about some scrap heap guys. Now, if you want to get somebody else on top of that, like, I don't mind the annual, like, Jake Bird type project, like, something along those lines. You can't do that, though, as the main, like, meats and potatoes of this deadline. No, like, go out and give up a couple of prospects to get two high-leverage relievers in here and totally change the landscape of this bullpen. Because that's the one aspect of this team that is not World Series caliber right now. The rotation obviously is. The defense finally is. The lineup is good enough, if not great, but at the very least, good enough, given the other facets of the team, to win a World Series. The bullpen is not. We know that. The Yankees know that. It will be addressed to the point where I'm actually not that worried about it. Now, it's a shame when you lose games because of it. And it's like, if it were a thing where it costs us the AL East, all right, that's a bad, I don't say bad, I hate the phrase bad luck. It's like, it's either bad or it's not. Who cares if it looks bad? Is it bad? Well, this would be bad if the Yankees were to lose the division because the bullpen wasn't good enough in the first half and they were banking on the trade deadline. We knew this was an issue in the offseason and they didn't address it. But if the Yankees can get by, which right now they are, they're going to be in first place very soon. you fix up the bullpen at the deadline, get it ready and built up for October, we're chilling. That's the plan right here, and I think the Yankees will do that. Right-handed catcher, I still want Ryan Jeffers. I know he had the hamate injury, but he's going to be healthy by the deadline. Go out and get him. Like, you need a righty catcher. And there's other names out there, sure. Now, I keep saying he's going to platoon with Wells. That will be what it is, because Wells is a great defensive catcher, and he handles the pitching staff well. They have to, honestly, I would, seriously, not being a Yankee Facebook guy or somebody says, like, oh, this guy's bad, send him down. I would love for the Yankees to send Wells down to AAA for, like, 2 weeks. Like how the Twins did with Royce Lewis. Send him down for a couple weeks, or Plouffe on BT was talking today how a lot of times nowadays they'll send just guys back down to, like, the instructional league. And I'm not saying this in a dissing, insulting way to Wells. We need to go back to the drawing boards here, because there is a lot of good with Austin Wells to where, yo, I don't need you to be a 30-homer bat. I don't need you to be Mike Piazza. I need you to be a competent at-bat if there's a runner on third base less than two outs. I would almost say, like, give him a mental break, 2 weeks, send him down just to get right, because not to, you know, sound like a corny coach here, but it's like, we do need Austin Wells. He will be a part of this. With that said, you get the righty catcher in here, which we needed even when Wells is good. You need the righty catcher in here to be able to tune against lefties. And, you know, when you don't want to have two lefty catchers. We know that. With that in mind, if Wells doesn't turn it around, well, we didn't acquire Jose Caballero to be the starting shortstop last year. We didn't bring in Trent Grisham to be somebody that we looked at as the everyday center fielder who would eventually re-sign to maintain that role. Things can, again, change very quickly. Gio Urshela in 20, I mean, there's countless examples of this, obviously. You bring in Ryan Jeffers, while the plan would still be, yo, Wells, you're catching for the most part almost every day. Wells continues to struggle. Ryan Jeffers, whoever it is that we bring in, is hitting and the defense is fine. Well, before you know it, ALDS game one, Austin Wells is in the starting lineup. It's about options. It's about depth. It's about having the options, the choices to be able to have that sense of urgency that everybody's excited about the Yankees that they have this year. It's more so about they have depth to be able to make those decisions. Right now, they don't. There's no decision to be made. Unless you really like a Scar, which, fair, like, start a Scar. But is anybody right now the postseason lineup surrounded around, centered around J.C. Scar as a starting catcher? Like, no, no. No matter what, we need to get a righty catcher in here. We know that. Bullpen is number one. Right-handed catcher is number two. Back to Skubal. What would it cost? It wouldn't be Lombard. It's only half a year. It's a rental. Not many teams are going to be involved. The Tigers may not trade him anyways. If it is anything to do with, like, Lombard, obviously not. Could we send one of the starting pitchers back? For sure. I mean, Weathers isn't going anywhere. Warren, I mean, I don't want to trade anybody. I'll tell you, Elmer Rodriguez, I've talked about a lot. Like, you know, prospects, you got to, you want to give up some. Choose your untouchables, but not everybody can be untouchable. Like, all right, LeGrand Hayes not going anywhere? Word. Lombard's not going anywhere? Word. I like Dax Kilby a lot. I don't want to trade him, but I don't want to trade anybody. But you're going to have to if you want to make this team better. Point is, if there's a lane to get it done, do it. Because if you don't, the Blue Jays could get him or the Dodgers could get him. And that's where you enter a shit show. That would be a gut punch if the Blue, or particularly really if the Dodgers were to get Skubal. I mean, that would be devastating. So it's about, you know, kind of playing chess a little bit. But you don't want to play the chess game if that means, oh, to do so, to participate, we have to trade George Lombard Jr. And you don't worry about that because Yankees wouldn't do that. But if there's a deal within reason, which a lot of times things like that can happen to where, you know, you see the return on a certain deal, it could be total opposite of what you expected, whether it's a massive overpay or it's like, damn, we got him for that. And then you get into the reason like, oh, I guess that makes sense. There's only a half year left. Skubal's going to cost a lot, more so because there's probably going to be a team out there that does overpay for him. And that's what scares me a little bit. But make no mistake, the Yankees do not need Skubal at all. He would make them better. He would certainly make another team better. And for that reason, you got to make sure you make the phone call. And the Yankees will make the phone call. Again, Bob Nightingale says the industry believes the four suitors would be the Dodgers, Padres, Blue Jays, and Yankees to potentially acquire Skubal at the deadline. Wanted to talk about that because some people have been discussing it. Obviously, I'm down to acquire Skubal. It's not first and foremost by any means. Bullpen is one, catcher is two. But again, multiple thoughts at once. We can talk about everything. We will talk about everything. 5 days a week, the Morning Yankees show. Anyways, I'm going to have to get out of here soon, yo, because I got BT at 9:30. I don't want Chris Rose to kick my ass. Off day today. Let's enjoy the off day. We got Sacramento tomorrow. We'll be live. Late games, by the way. Friday night, 9:40 Eastern first pitch. Saturday, 10:05 Eastern first pitch. And then game three Sunday, series finale at 4:05. Game one will be... Oh, I have it right here on my screen. Why don't I just look at the goddamn computer? Excuse my language. Excuse my the GD. I apologize. Game one, Rodon versus Severino. Game two, Weathers versus JT Jin. And game three, Will Warren on the bump versus not yet announced for the Sacramento A's. But I'm pumped for some late night baseball. Off today, I'm going to see Mandalorian again tonight. I think me and the Clo Dog can't wait for that. Mandalorian has aged well for me. I like that movie for what it is. It's a fine movie. It was fun. Anyways, I think that's all I got. That is all I got. We'll be live tomorrow morning with another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. We're 5 days a week, of course. We're on podcast, Spotify, all this and that. Click like on the stream if you don't mind. It does help out a great deal. And yeah, I will see you guys. I'm sure I'll post on Yanks Ave a little bit today on Instagram or whatever. But I'll see you guys live-wise. That's great, live-wise. Morning, tomorrow, new show. And then we'll be live late for game one, Yankees versus the A's. That's all I got, chat. I got to run. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. This has been another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. Appreciate you guys so much. And everybody have a great rest of your day. And I'll see you tomorrow morning for the Friday show. Go Yanks.